Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, I'm Jackie Cation. You are about to listen to the Dork Forest. Let's give you the info about it. First of all, you know the websites. DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, if you like a determiner, JackieCation.com has everything. All of my podcasts, including videos of my stand-up schedule, merchandise you can purchase if you would like, and a lot more info than you possibly even need. Let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg sang and produced and composed that song at the beginning of the show. He sang with his wife, Sarah. It's very beautiful. At the end of the program, he sings his version of the Mexican Hat Dance. That's Mike Rickberg. Vilmos fixes JackieCation.com. He is the web designer over there. And Patrick Brady fixes the audio. And in this case, there's a video intro. Very exciting. Anyway, those are the websites. If you want to support the show, you're doing it already by listening to it or watching it. And another way is to tell your friends and family, go on iTunes, do a review. Another way is to just give me money. Yeah. You could go use the donate button. You can make it even monthly if you're okay with making things monthly. You do a PayPal monthly. There's a monthly choice on PayPal. The PayPal is a button on the Jackie Cation or the Dork Forest website, and it goes directly to me. Thank you very much. I will use it wisely or foolishly. Your call as well. Now, my email address, jackie@jackiecation.com, is where you can contact me if you have any questions or concerns and about the Dork Forest. And I do have a Venmo account. It's jackie-cation, oddly enough. Another way to support the show is on dorkforest.com and jackiecation.com. There's an Amazon link. And the Amazon link just takes you to Amazon. You order like normal, and it supports the show because you came from Jackie Cation or dorkforest.com. Very exciting. Other than that, there is a Bandcamp. You can, if you have listened to all the episodes that are free and you need more content, there are several live episodes that are at thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. And those cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge a couple of bucks. There's also a storytelling album there that you can listen to some stories that I did live. And there are 17 free episodes before the Dork Forest was pre-recorded. So the audio isn't very good, but the guests were super funny and fun and dorky. So if you want to do that, go to thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. Other than that, let's see if there are other things that I should be talking about. Possibly the merch. Yeah, if you want to buy merch. The only other thing I want to talk about is the merch. You can get Dork Forest t-shirts, and you can get stand-up comedy t-shirts. You can get my albums or my DVD over at jackiecation.com/merch. There's pins, there's a challenge coin, there's a bunch of new things happening over there. Anyway, a lot of information. I don't think I've missed anything, but who cares? Let's get into the show. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Boy, am I not in my living room. And you're not in my living room. Steve Mandel, welcome back to the program.
I am also not in your living room.
You are not in my living room. We are remote. We're staying safe. We're hunkered down. We're separate but equal, right?
Right. I'll see if I can manage not to touch my face for an hour.
Right. Brown versus as I touch my face. That's exactly what it led to.
I'm inside your mind, Cation.
I had to do it, man. But here's the scoop. Where we're at here is, first of all, it's negative Steve, N-E-G-A-T-I-V-S-T-E-V-E. So negative without an E on the end before the word Steve, negative Steve. And that's your Twitter handle. And you have known Andy Ashcraft for 1,000 years.
Approximately, yeah. Right.
And we have known each other for probably 15 years now.
Yeah, half of 1,000 years.
Half of 1,000 years. You half named my album, This Will Make an Excellent Horcrux. It is one of my a memory that I have of you. And then you started doing stand-up comedy, and I was like, what's happening? And then it turned out you were always funny, and it turns out you could also do stand-up comedy. So that's that was a relief to all of us, I think.
You were, I don't know if inspiration is the right word, but you were the first comedian that I met in the wild. So it's kind of, oh, these are actually human beings and the people that can just go up and do that and not, and right. Then you patiently answered all of my noob questions.
Right. And there's also the fact that you're like, oh, I mean, the weird thing is sometimes you meet people and you're like, well, if they can do it, what's happening? I could do this. I could at least try and see if I like it. That's my thing. I'm like, might as well give it a shot, right?
Sure.
Anyway, I want you to dork out at me about monsters. That's what I've decided that you should dork it. Because you're like a diamond. You have many facets of dorkdoms.
I have very little facets of non-dorkdom.
Oh, I like that. It's but what I will say is that I don't know anything about monsters, right? Like I know that there are monsters. Like there's been monsters in literature and fiction forever.
And I guess we should specify fictional monstrous monsters and not just horrible human beings.
Oh, right. Yeah. Let's totally do fictional because non-fictional, too real, too real. Maybe that's why it was never my dorkdom is I kept meeting real monsters. And I'm like, that guy reminds me of Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde. Can't remember.
And generally, I think one of the things that has always attracted me to monsters are the best monsters are always sympathetic. They're the misunderstood.
Oh,
you know, your Quasimodos, your Frankensteins, your Godzillas, you know, they don't want to hurt anybody. They just
are
trapped in a world they never made, to quote Howard the Duck.
Ooh, Howard the Duck. Is he a monster?
I don't know. I guess the definition of monster is kind of nebulous.
Yeah.
You know, if we're putting Godzilla and Slobodan Milosevic in the same category of monster.
Yeah.
But they're completely separate.
Let's put those separate because Howard the Duck is actually a person sort of in his own right. Right.
Yeah. He comes from a planet of ducks. So he is just basically a normal guy in his home. But when he came to our Earth, he was outsider. I'd say that's probably right. Better than other than monster.
Right. Right. So I think, yeah, he came from a place where he wasn't even remarkable looking because it was a planet entirely of ducks.
Yeah, it was as the sentient Earth D.
Oh, really?
Marvel doesn't use letters. Marvel uses numbers, but it's effectively Earth D.
Earth. I want it to be Earth D now. Yeah. That's awesome. So, how did you get into monsters? Let's do that. Let's start at the beginning of Steve Mandel's life.
As a child, I mean, some of my earliest memories, my dad is an engineer, so he kind of adopted some nerdery.
Right.
So we used to watch Star Trek reruns every weekend before, you know, it would show on KTLA in Los Angeles mm-hmm. at 5.
Right.
So we would watch Star Trek and then have dinner after that.
Okay.
And so that got my interest in science fiction. I started reading, you know, whatever magazines or books I could come across at the library. And that, you know, like Famous Monsters of Filmland was a big one. And that got my interest in a lot of the classic monsters.
Do you have favorite Star Trek monsters from the original TV show?
I always liked, I don't remember the exact name. He went by Red Jack. He was like this psychotic spirit that had inhabited Jack the Ripper and just continued to inhabit people and make them go crazy.
Oh, was that in, that wasn't in Next Trek, right?
That was Classic Trek.
That was Classic Trek. Okay.
I come from, you know, as we said, 1,000 years ago, mm-hmm. there was a time before Next Generation, ENG.
Right. Before Next Generation. And that's so weird because I watched so much original Star Trek as a child that you would think I would remember. I remember the Jack the Ripper episode, but I didn't remember him occupying other people.
I don't know if maybe we didn't get the full series in syndication because I have distinctive memories of several episodes and then no memories of other episodes.
Right. Right. I think that they played the same. I mean, there were only three seasons, right?
Right.
So what is that? 60 episodes-ish?
73, I want to say.
Okay. I feel like they played the same 35. Over right. and over and over again.
It's the greatest hits package.
Yeah. Yeah. More than anything else. And then, and then you decide to read about the classic monsters.
Right. And that's how I got into, and then, you know, they would show monster movies a lot on, you know, local channels. So I got to see Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Do you know, I digress, but in Milwaukee on Friday nights, Elvira would host a monster movie a week, right? And it was, right. And they would always play that song and they'd show the Bride of Frankenstein. You are so beautiful.
I do not remember that.
You do or do not?
Well, no, because I remember watching Elvira more as a teenager when salient, prurient interests started coming in. But I don't remember her.
What do you mean, Steve? I kid.
That's a separate dorkdom entirely. We won't. That's a
dork. That's a dorkdom we all have. That dork forest after dark. Yes.
But I seem to remember Elvira not showing, you know, your mainstream movies or your well-known movies. She would show, you know, obscure Italian, you know, giant scorpion movies or the green slime from outer space, stuff like that.
Right.
That they could get for cheap or public domain.
Because it was on it was on Channel 18, which was the UFC, UHF. Yeah, right. That's it.
Where you had to go to the second dial. I saw your dial motion.
There was my hand twitching as I'm trying
to... Reminder, 1,000 years old.
Exactly. No remote. And yes.
Oh, we had remote. It was my little brother.
Oh,
Michael, go change it to Channel 13.
I was the youngest, so I was the remote. Jackie, go turn on Channel 18. And so I did. Go turn it up. Go turn it down. Don't make the dial go too fast. Remember how you were... And they're like, no, you're going to break the dial.
And the other problem, which I'm assuming you had as well, is because I had two siblings, a lot of times we would have to jockey for channel time. So I couldn't see like Elvira or some of the weird monster movies I wanted to see because, you know, my sister didn't like them.
How did you do that? What was the social contract?
We would generally just take turns.
Okay. We had to call it.
Oh, no, yeah, we were a little bit more democratic than that. So Dad had ultimate veto power.
Yeah, both parents. Both parents had ultimate veto power. And
there were certain things that, like, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and Wizard of Oz were the two things that everyone in the family could agree on.
Right.
So if they were on, we were watching. Didn't matter what else was competing.
Right. Nancy did not have a horse in the race of what was on television. But she did have a certain part of the couch that she was like, you can't actually sit there.
Oh, yeah. We all had assigned seating.
Yeah. We did not have there was too many of us to have assigned seating. they also had veto power on the assigned seating. And I remember on Friday, because on Friday nights, the monster movies would play, but I always wanted to watch Tarzan because the Tarzan movies played for like a year, all of the Johnny Weissmuller ones. And then, if my dad was home on a Friday night, he would be like, no, there's boxing. And then for some reason we all had to watch boxing.
I lucked out in that regard and that my parents were not big sports fans. So we never had to, you know, interrupt a monster movie on Sunday afternoon for football.
Right. I don't think I ever saw, I think I saw a vampire movie in the theater once in like the early 70s. Were there any of the monster movies that were too scary for you when you were little?
I guess I never got to see any of the R-rated movies until, you know, we got a VCR like when I was 15, I think, 15 or 16.
Oh, then.
So by that time, I was fine to watch.
Inured.
But beforehand, for me, I never found any. My sister, one year, my mom and her mom are both huge mystery and suspense fans. So we would watch Alfred Hitchcock movies whenever they were on.
Okay.
So one time as a family, we got together and watched a little film called The Birds. And my sister screamed and screamed and still has a phobia to this day.
About birds. There's several. These weren't monsters. Were the birds monsters in that movie, do you think?
They were effectively monsters.
As a group, right?
As a group. They just started attacking. That's kind of one of my favorite tropes in a horror movie is no origin. They just one day the birds turned against humanity. And there was never any explanation or any reason. And I think that kind of amplifies the terror.
Yeah.
As if there is a magic spell or a, you know, an experimental device that, you know, okay, that explains it. That gives me reassurance that there is a solution. If,
right.
You know, you can't find that. If all of a sudden these things just start attacking for no reason, there's no solution. There's no hope.
Right. How are you supposed to stop it? You can't, there's no control. Is control kind of an issue with monsters? Or
For some.
Yeah.
Control and containment.
Yeah. So the birds, how did the birds, spoiler alert, how did the birds end? How did we fix it? Did anyone fix it?
I don't, if I remember correctly, it's been a while since I've seen it. I don't think it was solved. There was actually a sequel that nobody saw.
Oh, interesting.
It was like one of those sequels 30 years later, straight to video.
Okay. Where the birds have just been waiting, silently waiting.
There was also Birdemic, which is a separate.
What was
Birdemic
that?
Birdemic is one of those, it's kind of up there with The Room in one of the modern so bad it's good cult films.
Okay.
It was, I think, Australian or New Zealand film.
Birdemic?
Like Birdemic, like Pandemic.
Right.
With birds instead of pans. and it's just, just very amateur-y, awful effects, awful dialogue, and just hilariously bad.
And were there a lot of birds? Were people pecked to death?
There were a lot of pixels that looked like birds.
Okay. Kind of. All right. And so your kid, were their favorite ones? Like, what are your, yeah, let's get into the favorite ones.
Well,
of monsters.
There is a point in every young boy's life where he starts learning about and getting into dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah. It's usually toddlers.
I was like elementary school, like I think five, six, seven, somewhere
okay.
in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was learning about dinosaurs, and I was homesick one day and flipping channels, and I saw a film about a little guy called Godzilla. And that spoiled me for dinosaurs forever, because what's the point of a dinosaur if he can't spit atomic fire?
Oh, interesting. So the reality of dinosaurs was ruined for you by the fiction of Godzilla.
Right.
Wow. Which Godzilla was it? Do you remember?
I remember it being a movie called Destroy All Monsters, but I'm not sure if that's time appropriate. I think that might have been a little after, and I might just be kind of juxtaposing.
Okay.
But that's always kind of been my favorite, because that's just a Royal Rumble of giant monsters.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. It is basically all of the monsters that Godzilla had met up to that point, plus a couple of other monsters from other franchises that got thrown in. And I'm sure there is a plot, but it's just basically a giant.
It's just a button mash of monsters. Just
a button mash of monsters. That's a good plural noun.
What was who were the monsters in Destroy All Monsters? I wonder.
Well, Godzilla.
Okay.
And Godzilla's eternal enemy or main enemy is a guy named Ghidorah or King Ghidorah, who is a three-headed golden dragon that spits lightning out of his heads.
What?
He was the villain in the most recent Godzilla film that came out a couple years ago, last year, 2 years ago.
Okay. And then
Godzilla had his buddies, Mothra and Rodan. Mothra is a giant moth. Rodan is a pterodactyl.
Oh, flies. Is the moth fly?
The moth flies.
Okay.
Minya, who is Godzilla's son and just kind of looks like the Grimace.
Okay. Yes.
There was a guy named, I shouldn't give genders to monsters. There was a creature named Manda, who is just like a giant serpent.
Manda?
Manda.
Okay.
Like panda with an M.
Okay.
And I'm
that's six monsters.
Yeah, there were more. I need to go back and...
Did they break into teams?
I think initially it was kind of each monster was at its own location. I think there were aliens were controlling the monsters and making them attack.
Okay.
And then King Ghidorah became the big bad. So in the end, everybody teamed up against him.
Okay. And who made Ghidorah a king? Do we remember?
I think, you know, I think he just said so and nobody said otherwise.
Well, that's, I mean,
you didn't check his bloodline or anything.
No, there's no, the blue blood of monsters. What does Ghidorah look like?
He is basically a three-headed dragon.
Oh, that's right. He's the gold three-headed dragon.
He's winged, so he flies.
Oh, he's got all the powers.
He's got to be really tough to fight against everybody else.
Right, because he can look in three directions at once, at least.
Right.
And does each head blow lightning?
Each head blows lightning.
Okay.
I think the transition from, because at some point Godzilla defeats him and rips off some of his heads, and then they are replaced in later movies with cybernetic or robotic heads.
Oh, by so some sort of evil
King Ghidorah.
Okay. That is hilarious. And so these aren't particularly scary movies, right? With the monsters, they're just more.
If you go back and rewatch the original Gojira, which is the Japanese G-O-J-I-R-A.
Okay.
That holds up very well. And that was just Godzilla emerging from the sea and stomping around Japan.
Okay.
And that is very scary, and that holds up very well. When they brought it over to America, they didn't have any faith in the source material, so they spliced in Raymond Burr, Ironsides,
right,
as an American reporter, so we had somebody that we could identify with, and right. So that kind of dilutes it a little bit. It's just basically, you know, white guy giving exposition.
I saw that Tom Cruise movie once where the white guy taught the Japanese how to fight with swords. You ever see that one?
That was a different kind of monster.
It was an error. It was an error in filmmaking. And so there's all of those. What
a fun piece of trivia about the original Godzilla. When they added Raymond Burr, his character's name was reporter Steve Martin.
Oh.
So in 1984, they rebooted the franchise in Japan.
Okay.
They decided to bring it over to America and add the character back in for, you know, continuity's sake.
Right.
But by that time, there was another guy named Steve Martin who you may have heard of.
I have heard of him.
I think he was a figure skater.
He was a very famous figure skater.
So if you watch that movie, they never say his name directly. It's always, "Hey, Steve," or "Hey, Mr. Martin."
Oh, okay.
Because they can't use the full name.
Right, because it's weird. Because it's just going to take everyone out of the movie. Like, because saying, "Hey, like, Steve," isn't going to...
Much like Americans can't watch a movie that doesn't have a white character in it, they also get confused if there are two people in existence with the same name.
Yeah, there's all kinds of... The learning curve right now is super steep. But we can do it. We can do it. And
flatten the curve, Jackie. That seems to be the watchword.
That does seem the... Ooh, let me write that down, actually, because I think that would make an excellent punchline on my steep curve joke. flatten the curve. anyway... there we go. Hi. We've taken a small break, you guys, to think about stand-up comedy. Your monster love is mostly these giant dinosaur-y kind of looking monsters.
Well, not, and I had a kind of a secret ally in my monster watching with my mom. My mom is not really into it, but her brother, his favorite movie of all time is King Kong.
Oh.
And they would tell stories of going to a very tense Yankee, I think it was a Yankees game when they were kids, and then Howie making them leave early so he could go home and watch King Kong on television.
Oh, because it was in the TV guide, and it was pre-VCR. Yeah. Right. I don't know a lot about King Kong. I saw a sort of a terrible, I think it was Kong Island.
Kong Skull Island was great.
I'm so sorry. It was an amazing movie called Kong Skull Island. What was the first King Kong? He was on and he was holding the lady, right?
Right.
When was that made?
That was that was the 30s, I believe. 36, I want to say.
Okay.
I'm sure someone is screaming into their headphone.
Sure.
But and that's, again, that was kind of my one of the other tropes I like, of the misunderstood monster.
Okay.
Where Kong is just hanging out on Kong Island, having a good old time. The natives, he protects the natives from other monsters.
Oh, does he?
The natives feed him and worship him. And then Americans come and kidnap him and bring him to Broadway. Because that's what we need on Broadway.
I almost had a spit take. I forgot that I was drinking.
Not making any of this up. And so Kong kind of tries to give it the good try, and eventually his bestial nature takes over. He gets freaked out by, you know, flash photography and people screaming at him, and he breaks out and he kidnaps the lady and crawls up the Empire State Building.
And then,
but this isn't his fault. He's a giant gorilla that you put on Broadway. What did you expect?
Right. I don't know how you don't introduce a giant gorilla into the plot and have him not kind of go berserk and start picking things up. But right. So he was just on Kong Island.
He was just hanging. Yeah.
Okay. So then he's discovered. He's essentially tranquilized and dragged off to New York to become a star. And I don't remember. I don't think I've ever seen King Kong, the original King Kong. How does that end? Does it end poorly for Kong?
It ends poorly. It is the, you mentioned the infamous scene or the iconic scene of him on Empire State Building kind of swatting down planes.
Biplanes, if I remember correctly.
Yes, because again, 1936.
Right.
Ish. And then he eventually, I'm going to spoil this.
Yes, spoiler alert.
He eventually just falls off the building and hits Broadway and dies. And they're like, oh, well, our airplanes got him. No, it wasn't the planes. It was Beauty that killed the Beast.
Oh, was it Beauty that killed?
He was in love with Fay Wray.
That's right. He was in love with Fay Wray, which is weird. They never really address the fact. I mean, I suppose it's you know what it is? It's another Raymond Burr. They're like, well, why isn't there a white lady that you're going to want to dress in a filmy dress?
Right.
Pre-Hays Code. And what did she do for a living? I'm just curious. How did she meet King Kong?
She was an actress. They did not... The party that they did not originally intend set out to kidnap King Kong. They just intended to. They'd heard about this mysterious island in the tropics, where this strange god lives. And so there was basically a film crew, and she was an actress, and they were just going to intend to film some scenes there, try to get some footage of this monster, and then wrap
Geraldo
it up.
And the Safe. Okay, so it was like an old timey reality TV.
Except the Safe had much more than Geraldo got.
Yes.
So
she was with them on the original island.
Right.
Oh.
And that gets a little, those scenes get a little hard to watch in the 21st century, because a little, Rudyard Kipling, White Man's Burden kind of, oh, look at the savages.
Right. Yeah. There's movies all over the 20s, 30s, 40s, and I think the 50s. Nope, even today.
Having recently watched Police Academy, through the 80s.
Through the 80s, possibly the 90s. There has been, and I'm sure at the time, this is always funny to me because I know that Bing Crosby was always, he wanted to book black actors and actresses.
Right.
It was always, he was like, how can we get people into these movies and get them some work? But there was only two roles, right? There was like,
right.
Satchmo was in the musical version of the Philadelphia Story, High Society. And he just played a trumpet player, a narrator. But I remember in Holiday Inn, it was just Mamie. Right. It was just the actress who played his housekeeper. And so
I was flipping around Turner Classics a couple of years ago, and there was a Bob Hope movie. It was, I want to call it like Ghost Breakers or Ghost Chasers or Spook Chasers, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically Bob Hope and his black manservant, investigating ghosts.
Sidekick at the best.
I think it was like.
Worse than that.
Butler,
fantastic.
Unpaid intern, maybe.
I don't know if Bob had those.
But and it was kind of, and even as it was not overt. I mean, they weren't using bad words and they weren't abusing him, but just some of the lines that were considered, still acceptable in those days are
right.
Some of the jokes were really cringy.
Cringy, and I bet you how they wrote the character. Like, I'm sure there was a fair amount of mugging that guy was expected to do.
Yeah.
Boo. Anyway, live and learn, people. As we're moving along, we're going to let people be humans.
You've gone from the fake monsters to the real monsters.
Exactly. Yeah, we waded off into real monsterhood. So, yeah. So there's all those movies. There's the Godzillas, the King Kong. Who else?
When I was, I don't remember when this came out. I think it was 79. It's a little film called Clash of the Titans that I'm guessing you've probably seen.
I loved Clash of the Titans at the time. I remember it was that claymation, though.
That was a guy named Ray Harryhausen.
Okay.
And I read about him in one of these magazines and kind of went backwards from here because he was one of the classic claymation stop motion animators.
Did he do Jason and the Argonauts too?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
He did Jason and the Argonauts. He did a couple of Sinbad movies.
Okay.
Earth versus the Flying Saucers, which, if I remember correctly, did not have monsters, but it had flying saucers, so that's almost as good.
Right. And but he did Clash of the Titans. I remember Perseus had to fight Medusa.
He had to fight Medusa, but that was as
he always has.
Right. but that was the infamous release the Kraken, and you had the giant Kraken.
Oh, right. That would come out of the. Yeah.
And, you know, and all sorts of, there was, I forget the name, Bubo, I think, the little clockwork owl.
Oh, right.
And there was a sadder looking guy.
Oh, right.
Also, the first time young Steve saw nudity in a movie. So that's great.
Interesting. I think I accidentally saw a free range boob at the drive-in at a movie that my parents didn't know that we were going to see. and they're like, well, we're watching it. We're here.
Drive-ins were not designed for large families. Even the five of us, my parents took us to see Star Wars in the drive-in, and it was such a bad experience. They had to take us back to see Star Wars in a movie theater.
Seven times. I remember Nancy Cation took me to see Star Wars, and I was like, I have to see it again. She was like, I'd see it again. And then we went again and saw it. And I was like, I have to see it again. And she's like, oh, I'm done. And then I had to take the bus to see it myself at 12, which felt like bad parenting. But in the end, I lived. So
I did. Before I could drive, my brother and I would take the bus to go around to see whatever films we wanted to see over the summer.
Yeah.
And again, probably not the best parenting, but we lived.
Everyone lived. So the people who didn't live, they're not telling the tales. It's dead children tell no tales. What? That seems dark.
Oh, I don't know. Do you guys have a Ouija board?
We do.
That's a separate episode.
That was one of the first gifts I bought for Andy was a Hellboy Ouija board, which he could not have been more confused about. He was like, I don't know what to do with this, he said.
Yeah, so, well, how does Hellboy use a Ouija board with that giant hand?
Well, that's a Ouija board that really works. It's not being worked from beneath.
Okay.
So whatever. I'm trying to think because the only monsters I can think of are sort of there is a monster movie I love, and it's it's Abbott and Costello.
Oh, the Abbott and Costello movies, the ones that I've seen have all been great.
They meet monsters.
They meet most of the universal monsters. So I think they met Frankenstein, they met Dracula, they met the Invisible Man, they might have met a mummy and a werewolf.
Yeah.
I haven't seen.
Yeah.
And those held up. I mean, because I always thought of Abbott and Costello as other than who's on first, kind of hacky. But I watched that one Halloween, and yeah, that holds up really well, and it was really fun.
Yeah, they're really fun. And they never scared me as much as sort of like, I once saw a vampire, I think it was, and it was supposed to be funny. This is where a lot of scary movies lose me because they're sold to me as comedies. And then it turns out they're also terrifying. Vampire movie.
George Hamilton played a Dracula, I'm blanking on the name now, but in like the 70s, early 80s, he did, a Dracula movie that was supposed to be a comedy.
And it was pretty scary?
I don't remember it being scary. The one scene I remember was the Van Helsing character shows up while Dracula's on a date and is like, ah, I've got you now, and shoots him in the chest with a silver bullet. And Dracula just looks at him and is like, yeah, silver bullets are for werewolves, asshole.
That is awesome. I have to say that this one was called like the Night of the Hunter, or it was like, I feel like it was with Buscemi or somebody. It was like with somebody. It was terrifying. It was in the early 2000s or late 90s.
Is that the one with Nosferatu?
Yes. And it was okay. A silent film version of...
The guy that played in the original silent film was actually a vampire?
Yes.
Yeah, that was less funny and more scary than it was made out to be.
Oh my God, I couldn't sleep all night. I made the mistake of watching it, first of all, in twilight times. You don't watch, can't read anything scary or watch anything as the sun sets. Let's see, movie. I can't remember. That was
Eddie Izzard was in that, if I remember correctly.
Oh, right. I think Eddie Izzard was in it.
It's like Shadow of the Vampire.
2000.
There we go.
And I've only seen scary movies accidentally. And it's never in real life that I've been able to choose. But that one was incredibly well done, I thought.
Well, I saw it a while. I saw it on VHS.
Okay.
So I did see it and I did enjoy it, but I remember very little about it. And to be honest, there may have been some marijuana involved.
That'll happen. It's legal now. Live it up. I don't know
where you are, maybe.
Let's say that you were here when it happened. Okay. And or wherever. You were in Jamaica, and then you watched Shadow of the Vampire, where it's legal.
I would always take quick trips to Jamaica to watch weird films.
Whenever you wanted to smoke weed back in 2000, you would fly to Amsterdam and say to yourself, I need a cup of coffee, some chocolate, and I need to see what Augie Smith calls the saddest attic in the world. And so, speaking of monsters, but Dracula movies, I don't know, did you ever read that Deadpool when he was married to the monster lady?
I read part of that run.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the middle of after I rage quit.
Okay. Yeah. I think it was after Brian Posehn and Jerry Duggan stopped writing it together, and it was just Jerry Duggan. And Jerry Duggan, one of my favorite scenes was Deadpool meets, I guess the dark side of the moon is populated with vampires.
Yeah.
And so Dracula goes, so Deadpool goes there and he's like, why are there so many Draculas here? And they're like, we're not all named, that's a guy. And he's like, I'm sick of you, Draculas. And so, it's a recurring joke that made me laugh every time. So
I've always liked Jefferson Twilight, I think his character's name is, on the Venture Brothers.
Okay.
Who is the Blackula hunter.
Yes.
And again, Blackula is a specific character, but it just kind of in this context, it's like, oh, yeah, black vampires.
Right. He was a black man who hunted black vampires. That was a great Dr. Venture kind of introduction to some monsterhood. Right. Was there a good werewolf movie? I've always been kind of drawn to the werewolves.
I mean, the original werewolf movie is really good with, I think that was Lon Chaney Jr.
Okay. What's that one called?
The Werewolf. Oh. The Wolfman.
Okay.
And again, that is kind of not misunderstood, but you know, it wasn't his fault. He got this curse, I think, by being scratched by another werewolf. So he spent all of his life trying to find a way to either reverse his werewolfness, wolfiness,
mm-hmm.
or kill himself.
Wow.
And this was the original shared cinematic universe, because he started showing up in other movies. So he was like consulting with Dr. Frankenstein to see if they could find a cure. And so he met Frankenstein and he met Dracula.
Okay. So was he misunderstood, or did he choose to become... No.
I don't know if he chose to become, in Legends, he was Vlad the Impaler.
That's right.
So he was just this horrible character from history, and he was cursed to become this monster. So he never really shows, he never shows any remorse. He's just after our women and our blood.
I have to say that the misunderstood monster seems to be a denial of accountability, but or just sort of a growing up, and you're like, well, I need to take a you know, control of my own life, and I'm going to try to change this bad part of myself. That narrative kind of sounds interesting.
I think a lot of it is more fish out of water.
Okay.
You know, Frankenstein. You know, Frankenstein was created in a lab, and he gets out somehow and wanders around, and you know, he doesn't know. You know, A, he's terrifying just to look at him. And B, he kills a small child at some point because he doesn't know any better.
Oh, interesting. Was that the original Frankenstein movie? Or
I believe that was in the original. There's a scene where he meets this little girl and they start playing by a lakeside. Mm-hmm. And she starts ripping petals off of a flower and throwing them into the lake. And then they kind of fade to black. So the assumption is, Frankenstein just murdered her and threw her in the lake because he thought that's what they were doing.
Oh, it's like he ripped off her legs and arms, or like the implication was that he started pulling her apart or something. Did you ever read Frankenstein?
I did. Huh. I read Frankenstein and Dracula in high school.
Okay. Were they good? I mean, I know they're classics. Did you enjoy them?
They were both good. They're both significantly different than the classical movies are.
Okay.
The movies both kind of took elements from the books and but made them their own stories.
Okay.
Whereas there have been more faithful adaptations of both books, and none of them have ever done well commercially.
Okay. Because supposedly Frankenstein was one of the first monster movies. I mean, I suppose what was Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, but.
Well, the Dracula and Nosferatu, I believe. I don't know that much about the silent era. There were a few monster movies in the silent era.
Mm-hmm.
The one that I've seen was The Golem, which is based on traditional Jewish folklore.
About a monster in traditional Jewish. What did the Golem do?
He was basically protecting the Jew, the oppressed Jews in I want to say Warsaw ghetto.
Oh,
like he was basically a giant clay creature that a rabbi animated, and he went around killing. I guess this was pre-Nazis.
Oh, weird. So, as we know from history, the Jews have been persecuted in Warsaw for 1,000 years.
Right.
So it was created.
Not just Warsaw, it turns out.
Not just Warsaw. It's true. We could, right, think globally, act locally. That's what people always want to oppress, do.
And I don't think that was intended, but that's how it worked.
That is how it worked. But the Golem has been around. Wasn't it pre like Black Death or pre, like, I think it was created in the 1000s or 1100s, right? Or didn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know when it entered into folklore. I haven't really done the research on that, but it's been around forever.
Yeah.
I learned about it, of course, through a comic book because the Invaders, Captain America, Submariner, Human Torch, met a golem in Warsaw in the 40s.
Okay. That is awesome. I like the idea of talking about sort of, do you read much horror now or monster comic books or books? Or, I mean, would you consider the monster genre as horror, or is it, does it cross?
Yeah, I think it's a subsection of horror. Again, I don't know where, I mean, much like we're not sure what constitutes a monster. Horror is anything that I think that is intended to scare you.
Yeah.
So yeah, monsters are generally lumped in with horror, but they don't have they don't share, you know, like a Frankenstein movie doesn't share a lot in common with, say, a Freddy Krueger movie or a Hannibal Lecter movie.
Right. Because sometimes it's tension and sometimes it's just a monstrous looking kind of being.
Right. And sometimes it's just buckets and buckets of blood and,
buckets of blood. Did you see the new Invisible Man movie?
No.
I have not. I heard it was pretty scary. But I like the idea of there being, did you ever, the last monster movie I saw was not a horror movie, was not scary at all. there was tension, but it was not, I don't think, created a scare. It was called Colossal, and it was that Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
Those monsters were cool looking.
Right, but in that one, the monsters were not the monsters. The monsters were the human beings, which is often the case in these.
Oh, which ones are like that? The Wolfman?
Like Frankenstein. Frankenstein is an innocent, and he is set upon because he looks different and can't articulate. And you know, so a lot of times it is the invisible. Well, I guess the invisible man is weird because he's a monster and a human.
Right. It doesn't use his powers for good.
Creature from the Black Lagoon is another good example because he's just a dude. He's he's swimming around in his lagoon, minding his own business, and these explorers come and find him and start basically just poke, 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 stop poking me, poke, poke. All right, I'm going to do something about it now.
Okay, that's an creature from the swamp. The Black Lagoon? Where is the Black Lagoon? Do we know geographically? Where did it start?
I want to say South America.
Okay. That's interesting. I like that there's different, because a lot of this stuff seems to happen in Eastern Europe.
Right. Eastern Europe that's where the Dracula myth came from. I think Frankenstein was set in Eastern Europe just because it was written by Europeans. Like, Eastern Europe is pretty creepy. Let's use that.
Right. I think, did you ever see Werewolf in London? That movie?
American Werewolf in London?
That's it.
Yeah. That is one of the classics of modern horror.
Was it horrible? Because I never saw it because it looked scary.
It was scary. It was scary, but with comedic elements to it.
Mm-hmm. That's how they get you. Go ahead.
Yeah, John Landis directed it, and he has experience in both worlds. So, the comedic element is when he first turns into a werewolf, he kills his buddy that he's backpacking through Europe with, and his buddy turns up as a ghost and continues to haunt him. But since he's a ghost, he can be a smartass. There's no repercussions, and then it's kind of fun. Just a little detail is. You see him decaying further and further as the movie goes along.
As a ghost?
As a ghost.
Oh, so he's sort of dissipating.
Right. Well, it's almost like his ghost represents his corpse.
Oh. So
he's getting grosser and grosser, even in ghost form.
That's kind of a nice twist. Who wrote American Werewolf in London? Do we know?
Might have been John Landis as well. I don't remember.
Okay.
Credits.
Yeah, credits are hard. So we went Black Lagoon. Where did that creature come from? Did that creature come from literature or?
No, he was made full cloth for the movie.
Okay. Yeah, because and then Swamp Thing is, as I'm going Lagoon Monsters. there's Swamp Thing and there's Man Thing. And I get them mixed up because I don't know anything about either of them.
Well, and they were created. They came out virtually the same time from two writers who were roommates.
Oh, really?
So there's some weird, and I'm assuming that they were also taking trips to Amsterdam and smoking the same stuff.
Right. I learned a little bit about. Now, was Animal Man? Is he a Swamp Thing too? I feel like he's a DC superhero,
he has interacted with the Swamp Thing in the past, but their link is, I think, fairly recent, maybe like the 90s on.
Okay.
Where, DC has kind of established these, there's colors. So Swamp Thing represents the green, and the green is the plant life. And then Animal Man represents the red, which is the animal life.
Oh, because of blood.
And I think Solomon Grundy was the gray, which is decay and entropy.
Ooh, I've never heard of Solomon Grundy.
He was on the Super Friends. He's basically a swamp zombie. He's a big white giant, like looks, albino.
Okay.
In a decaying suit. And he talks like the Hulk without pronouns.
Okay.
And, just.
He's got places to be. He doesn't have time for pronouns and determiners.
Sure.
I'm supportive. So what would you say, are there, did you like the last two Godzilla movies?
I did. I know other people disagree with me.
But this is the Dork Forest. You can dork out about...
Exactly. I'm pretty much going to enjoy most any giant monster that you put on the screen in front of me.
Uh-huh.
Unless Matthew Broderick gets involved. We'll talk about that.
No, that was so weird. All you saw was his foot.
Well, that was the problem, was it went from a he to a they. And so instead of, it more resembled a Jurassic Park film than a Godzilla film. And I think had it been titled something else, I probably would have enjoyed it more.
Okay.
Because it was called Godzilla. If you're using a franchise like that, there are certain expectations that come with it.
Right. But Mad Max, I got to see a car chase. There has to be some vehicles happening.
Well, that was, people had problems with the Mad Max movie because it didn't have the Charger, whatever the car was, the iconic car.
Oh, the specific car. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. An 18-wheeler? I'm on board.
Mad Max was Thunder Road was a brilliant, brilliant movie.
With what's her face?
With Tom Hardy and Charlize Theron.
Oh, yeah. I thought Tina...
Oh, that was Beyond Thunderdome.
Beyond Thunderdome. Okay. So, yeah, Fury Road. It was so funny because one of my brothers said, I didn't like Fury Road because it was just they drove out and then they drove back. And I was like, what did you think it was going to be? They just they drive somewhere and then they drive somewhere else. They might as well come back. That's where all the water is.
I mean, that's all Lord of the Rings is.
Well,
walk to this place and we walk over to this place and we walk someplace else.
Yeah, yeah. What do you want, Phil Cation?
Eagles will fly us.
Would you think of Jurassic Park as a monster movie, just even though they're dinosaurs?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I mean, they're a monster would be a dangerous kind of other or an unknown.
And they are created without their consent as well.
They were created without their consent. But then again, they were the dinosaurs were not really the enemies in that. It was the humans that released them. The dinosaurs were content to just kind of sit around and chomp on grass.
Right, right. And sort of eat each other and eat the plant life. Right. And yeah, they didn't have it. There was no agenda. That is interesting about monsters without an agenda. Because they are not the bad guys then, right?
Right. Well, and it's, I guess, like zombies. Zombies are just doing what zombies do, which is trying to feed. Unfortunately, what they're feeding on is us. So it's not their fault, but their agenda is specifically anti-us.
Right, right. And not on purpose, but just by accident.
Right. So like the best monsters are normally aliens because they come generally seeking malice. We are coming to take your water, take your women, subjugate your planet, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't feel bad if you slaughter a whole bunch of aliens because they're bad guys.
Okay.
Whereas you kill a Godzilla, he didn't really mean it.
Right, right. You went to his house and interrupted his day. That's what you did. So. Right. I like the first of the two Godzillas that have come out recently. There was a really great scene in it that made me like it even more. I don't mind a giant, slugfest, right?
Right.
There was that one where, what was the, I'm going to digress, but what was the one where you went into the ocean and then there was a portal and there were monsters on the other side of the portal and you had to close that portal?
Oh, Pacific Rim.
That was it. Pacific Rim was pretty cool.
That was really fun. Yeah, I enjoyed that. I mean, that's, giant monsters and giant robots.
Right. It was monsters versus robots, essentially.
I mean, my gripe about that is that the monsters didn't really have personality.
True.
I think they all had names, but the names were more for the selling of the action figures and for the plot of the movie. So it's just basically this really cool robot that we've gotten to know has to go fight a CGI thing.
Right, right. So yeah, you would like more personalization in your monsters.
A little bit, yeah.
Sure, I don't blame you. But in the first of the new Godzilla movies, there was a great scene on the subway where our character, our narrator guy that we're following through, finds that kid, and they're on the subway, and he's like, I gotta go fight Godzilla, but I got this kid. And if it were Bruce Willis, if it were a different action movie, he would have handed that kid to the closest woman.
Right.
And then kept going. But in this case, he actually found the kid's parent. And he didn't stop until he found the parent. And then he went and fought Godzilla.
So what we've learned in this episode is that Bruce Willis is the true monster.
I watched the first Moonlighting again, and it actually holds up. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I need to rewatch those at some point. But where will I find the time?
Where will you find the time? We all have a lot of time. You know what we should have done about 20 minutes ago is another one of those time claps. I wonder if we should do another one now. Let's go to Chrome. And when we get to the 10-second mark, is that cool?
Time.io?
Time.is.
Okay, so it's 04 now. So 14?
15.
15?
Yeah.
All right.
Good.
All right, we're pretty synced.
We're pretty synced. It's not bad. And 53:30 is where we're at. So I have to say that this has been kind of fascinating. What kind of what monsters have we not talked about that you want to let me in on? Any?
A couple that you may or may not enjoy that are kind of in the PG horror realm is really tough to do, to make something scary or entertaining while still not crossing the line that's going to traumatize kids.
Okay.
Two that I really like. One of my favorite movies of all time is Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And it is exactly what it sounds like.
What year is that?
89, 90, somewhere in there.
Okay. So it's in color.
It's in color.
Sometimes clowns in black and white will scare me more than clowns in color.
I can see that. But it's basically these aliens that look like clowns land on Earth and start picking up people to eat. But it's done PG, so there's very little blood or gore.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the murders or all of the killing is done clown style. So like there is one of my favorite scene where a clown eats a group of people using hand shadows. He's entertaining. Before they realize the clowns are evil.
What?
He's just doing hand shadows on a wall, and at one point there's a hand shadow of a dinosaur that then swoops down and eats them all.
Rawr. Oh, I found this coin behind your ear, and then I'm going to eat your ear. Yeah. Wow.
So, like, when they're chasing after people, they have they twist balloons into dogs, and the dogs become bloodhounds.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's very clever and very inventive, and the guys who did the clown design are fantastic.
Okay.
And then the other one, kind of in a similar vein, is Tremors.
Oh, yeah, the Kevin Bacon monster under the land.
Giant worms, graboids in the, I think, Arizona desert.
Graboids?
Yeah. And so that I think that's the term, because they come up and they grab you.
Yeah.
And that's, again, it's not very gory. There is some humor to it. The characters are kind of fun. And they don't know what the origin is. I haven't watched a lot of the sequels, so I don't know if they ever established an origin.
Right.
But it's just, and there's actually a great scene where Fred Ward and Kevin Bacon are sitting there waiting for their trap to spring. And like, so where do you think these things came from? And they both just start throwing tropes from other horror movies back and forth. Is it Atlantis? Is it alien invasion? Is it, radiation from Venus?
Ooh, Venus. Was there radiation from Venus that created a monster?
That was allegedly the cause of the original Night of the Living Dead.
Oh.
There's, and I don't know if they ever established it, but in one of the scenes, there's a guy in the background on television talking about strange radiation from Venus.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So I feel like there are just long boxes of information that we have not even addressed.
Oh, sure.
Because that just came up in passing and it's fascinating. So here's an example of what I was horrified by as a monster movie, but they weren't monsters, is Planet of the Apes. Sort of like right. Howard the Duck.
Right.
They're just apes that happen to be the main sentient beings on this planet.
I have always wanted to see, because the last three Planet of the Apes movies have done fairly well, and mm-hmm. they were fairly well received. I've always wanted to see Planet of the Humans, which is the horror movie that is made on Planet of the Apes. So it's made by the apes about the Eve. So it's basically a remake of Planet of the Apes, but it's with the apes and the roles of the apes and the humans switched.
Right, right. Which is, I mean, almost a little bit sort of like the birth of the, I mean, one of those original, it was like when we get to see how apes are treated, when right. dogs all die out in one of the Planet of the Apes movies, that is sort of that movie. But I love right. the idea of specifically just changing the perspective and doing that movie. That would actually be fascinating. And then, do you think Dune, do you think that the sandworms are monsters? Do you think that's a monster
really,
movie?
They're not really the antagonists. I think they're more just kind of local flora and fauna.
Excellent point. Excellent point. I like it. This has been fascinating. We're almost at an hour here, Steve Mandel. By the way, I was talking to Steve Mandel. You should probably know that. And if you were to go to, and I scratch my nose. If we were to go to Twitter, and you could look him up at Negative Steve, NegativSteve, you're doing a show and it'll be gone, like off the internet before this.
I don't know. I don't know the details, so I don't know if it will be archived or not.
Right. It's the Bird City, because you live in Phoenix. And
I do.
And that is, they do a comedy festival called the Bird City Comedy Festival. And they're going to do a joke off, right?
It's a one liner, like a 64 person one liner kind of, they do it up in brackets, single elimination.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, there's 50 first jokes every year in New York that somebody does. And it'd be kind of interesting to do a 50 first jokes about the pandemic, the COVID-19 quarantine.
No more pandemic jokes.
Oh, no. But I think, well, that's why they would have to be. I mean, and certainly your first joke is not going to be your best pandemic joke.
Right.
Kilmartin, we did a show last night, and Kilmartin had some pretty good quarantine stuff. So good for her. So it can be done, is what I'm saying.
Oh, no, it can be. I just have not seen it very. It gets lost in the wash of hilarious masturbation humor.
Oh, and what excuse did you need to do one more masturbation joke?
Well, the open mics are gone, so we got to get our tick jokes out there somehow.
Exactly. It's Steve, this has been fascinating and great. Thank you so much for doing the Dork Forest. Of course,
it's been a lot of fun.
Excellent. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?